The Czech-born architect Eva Jiřičná is famous internationally for her sleek interiors and signature glass and steel staircases. Ian Willoughby met the 77-year-old now for the first of a two-part interview. That's in this week's edition of One on One.
Eva Jiřičná is perhaps the best-known living Czech architect. Her London-based firm, Eva Jiřičná Architects, is famous for its sleek boutiques and dramatic staircases, while in recent decades she's designed a number of acclaimed buildings in her native country. Based in the UK since the 1960s, Jiřičná was born in the Moravian town of Zlín, where her father was an architect with the Batia Shoe Company. In the first half of a two-part interview, Eva Jiřičná recalls her early childhood in the Nazi protectorate.
It was during the Second World War, so the situation was really not terribly pleasant. So my parents tried to protect not only me, but also the other children from what was happening. We had an SS officer who was living across the road, and his daughter was my age, and so several times I hid her, you know, when she behaved badly. So then my parents had sleepless nights trying to see what the father's reaction was going to be, but we somehow survived. And in 1944, Zlin was bombed. So my father and the other architects were moved from Zlin to a little village outside Prague to somebody's, one of brother's directors' hunting lodge, when they were supposed to work on the reconstruction of Zlin. Of course, the war finished, and then Bata finished as well, because nationalization came very shortly after, so I never went back to Zlín, and I grew up in Prague.
I wanted to ask you, what do you recall of the latter days of the war? You were born in 1939, so at the end of the war you were 5 or 6. Do you remember, for example, the Prague uprising?
I do remember it very well, because my father and those two other architects who we were sharing the house with went to help to fight on the barricades and build the barricades in Prague. So they walked because there was no means of transport. So my mom and the other lady, another wife of another architect with her little daughter, who was only 2 years old, I was 5 and a half. So we were waiting, and I do remember, I just have heard on the radio that the war was over. And so, and even as a child, I had this tremendous, tremendous pleasure. I was running around the house and playing with my little toy and saying, the war is over, the war is over, because we did have to go down to the cell every time, you know, so the plane flew over. And so somehow I had this kind of minimal understanding of what the war meant. So, and then, of course, Prague started fighting. And then, again, a few days later, the Russian army came, because the Americans were held in Pilsen, and so the Russians celebrated Prague, and they also went through this little village. And my mom just took me, because everybody was so excited, so she took me to the road, and we were waving at the Russian tanks. And one thing which I do remember vividly, there was a Russian soldier, and he was wounded. And they threw him off the tank, and he was lying in a trench next to the road. And my mom and two other women rushed towards him and started looking for water. And of course, you know, I had never seen a wounded person, and so I saw blood and so on. And so my mom just said to me, don't look, don't look, you know. And then somehow, I don't really remember how it was eventually sorted, but I think they stopped one of the tanks, and according to my mom, so the Russian officer said, oh, there are too many of us, it doesn't matter. Anyway, so we came back, and the little house, oh well, the little house, it was a hunting lodge, so it wasn't very small. So it was occupied by the Russian army, and they turned it into a hospital, and the bedroom where my parents used to sleep, so it was used for the Russian officers and their new girlfriends. And so we spent the night, I do remember it very vividly, I was actually put on the top of a cupboard in the kitchen. So, where my mom put me to be away from the Russian soldiers, and she and the other lady locked herself up in the kitchen with us and the children. And my mom gave her watch to Sasha, one of the Russian soldiers who had about 50 watches on his arm. And so he guarded the door until the morning, and then we walked to Prague. We went to my grandfather in Prague.
that was the end of the war.
Your dad was an architect, you became an architect. It may then look like it was the family business, but wasn't it unusual for a woman to become an architect in those days?
Well, everybody was trying to prevent me from doing so. And to be honest, I really said it, and that I wanted to be a chemist. I just wanted to study chemistry because experimentation and chemistry just fascinated me. But then I passed the A-levels in physics instead of chemistry because I hated the teacher or the professor who taught chemistry because he was a new one. I didn't get on with him, and so I just took A-levels in physics, not knowing that they would not accept me to the Faculty of Chemistry without the A-levels in chemistry. And then it so happened, so I thought, oh gosh, what am I going to do? And a colleague of mine said, why don't you come with me to study architecture? So I mentioned it at home, and immediately, how can you think about anything so stupid? My father, my dear father, who loved me and I loved him, so said, you are going to become architect's wife, don't do it. And because everybody was telling me not to do it, so I did it, you know, so... And of course, I was totally unprepared, so to pass the entry exam was a miracle because I was totally unprepared. My portfolio was in bits, you know, didn't have any, had to do one very quickly. It was probably completely stupid and bad, but I passed all the other exams, physics and math and so on. So I managed to get in, and there were 5 girls and 60 boys. And it took me 3 months. And after 3 months, I knew I was at the right place. I absolutely fell in love with architecture, and I loved it ever since.
You went to London in 1968, prior to the Soviet invasion. You were planning to stay for only a year or so, I believe. When did it start sinking in that you wouldn't be going home, that your country had been occupied?
The fact that the country was occupied did not stop me from thinking that I was going back. I just thought, because I was so naive, I just thought it would get sorted in a couple of months. And because I came on the 1st of August, and it happened on the 21st of August, so I thought, oh, by next August it will be sorted and I'll be returning back to my country because everything would be okay. And it became not okay when I got a letter from Czech embassy saying that my passport was abolished, my visa was no longer valid, and the return to my country was no longer required. That is how they formulated it. What I didn't know then, that it was because I joined the Society for Human Rights, which I had absolutely no idea what it was, to be honest. I just signed a document, you know, so being today as a part of the organization, I had no idea what I was doing. But I took the names of the people to a French and a Czech journalist living in France who happened to be in London, and I was supposed to give him the list of people who joined the Society for Human Rights because there was no email, no copying machine, you know, no Xerox, and so... So when I left it at the hotel called Coburg opposite the Czech embassy, and they were the spying, you know, guys from Czech embassy paid the guy in the hotel. So they got the list, so including my name. So they wrote to me, and so I just thought, oh, well, that is a surprise. So, but I still didn't take it seriously because I just thought it'll get sorted. You know, I was really politically totally naive. I did not realize that was not possible to sort it. How, you know, so the world would not have started a boom because of the invasion of Czech Republic. They couldn't have fought the Russians. It was not possible.
How did you maintain family ties across the Iron Curtain? Your family was still here. You were there in the UK.
Well, it was very difficult. And my brother, who was only 17, by pure coincidence, he was working on one of the farms in England, picking strawberries or raspberries in order to get some money because he wanted to pay for an English course and before he went to the university. And when he realized that I was not going to go back, so he said, well, I'm going to stay. And my father, who was in Japan, because there was a Czech pavilion to be constructed in Osaka to prepare for the exhibition Osaka 1970, bad exhibition. So and he said, oh, children, you know, don't worry, I'll pick you up on the way back. Well, my poor dad just had to fly via Moscow back to Prague. And then, almost immediately after, he had a gallbladder stone, and he had an operation which went badly, so he got an infection after the operation, and he died in 1972, so he never picked us up. And we both remained in England, so I was helping my little brother, and now runs the Institute of Cancer Research in Zurich, so he He studied, he did PhD, and eventually he had a very good career, so as a professional. So, but, you know, I really for 20 years, I thought it was not going to last forever. And when I just have started thinking, yes, it is going to last forever, so suddenly it changed again. And Havel came with 1989, Velvet Revolution, and it was the end of it.
Going back a little bit to when you first moved to the UK, that was the late 1960s. The so-called swinging 60s. Did you experience all that stuff, or were you too busy building a new life, building a career?
I'm so lucky, I can't tell you. You know, I did experience swinging 60s. I did enjoy, on the design side, Mary Quant and Flower Power, Woodstock, Beatles, you name it. I was the right age, and I just have met the right people. And I think this story is never going to be repeated, and I'm really, really grateful for it.